by spending time in the gym or pounding the pavement. Some of the most recent work suggests that both yoga and Tai Chi will help you get a good night's sleep. Busy the mind. Spend a day at the seaside and you will probably feel more sleepy than usual. Many people attribute this phenomenon to the mysterious effects of taking the sea air. However, sleep scientist Professor Jim Horn from Loughborough University believes that there is another explanation. Horn thinks that people become sleepy when they are mentally rather than physically tired. According to Horn's theory, when you take a trip to the seaside, your brain becomes exhausted taking in all of the new sights and sounds, and it is this that makes you feel tired. To test his theory, Horn had one group of volunteers walk around a boring hall all day while another group went sightseeing. Even though each group expended the same amount of energy, those that were out and about ended up feeling far more tired. So if you want to sleep well, get out of the house and spend the day window shopping, sightseeing, or visiting a new museum or gallery. Know when to head to bed. It sounds silly, but many people fail to get to sleep because they aren't tired. One of the quickest ways of overcoming a sleep problem is to simply aim to get up 15 minutes earlier than normal. If that doesn't work, try implementing a tough but effective regime called restrictive sleeping. For the first few days, do not nap during the day, and then go to bed 6 hours before you want to wake up. Note down how much you slept during the night, and after about 5 days, figure out your sleep efficiency by dividing your average time asleep by your average time in bed. So if, for example, you'd slept for 5 hours but been in bed for 6 hours, then your sleep efficiency would be 0.83. If your sleep efficiency is greater than 0.9, then go to bed 15 minutes earlier for the next 5 days. If, on the other hand, your sleep efficiency is less than 0.9, then go to bed 15 minutes later. Repeat this process until you are getting between 7 and 8 hours sleep each night, but with a sleep efficiency of 0.9. Strange bedfellows. Your partner's snoring, sheet-hogging, differing sleep schedules and tossing and turning can all prevent a good night's sleep. No surprise, then, that around a quarter of American couples now sleep in separate beds and that many new homes are being built with 2 master bedrooms. If your partner is keeping you up all night, think about sleeping apart, perhaps scheduling time for intimacy at the start of the night and a snuggle in the morning, buying a king-sized bed, or filing for divorce. 3. Just before you head for bed. The 30 minutes or so directly before you go to bed is very important to the quality of your sleep. Use this time wisely by trying some of the following techniques. Spend time in the tub. Several sleep researchers have arranged for people to take long baths in the name of science. In one study, Dave Bunnell and his colleagues from the University of California had people take baths at different times during the day and then examined how well they slept at night. The procedure was simple. Each of the volunteers had a rectal thermometer inserted into them and were then asked to carefully sit or stand on a chair. My guess is that the majority chose to stand. Next, the volunteer was lowered on the chair into a giant bath that had been heated to a very pleasant 41 degrees centigrade, and spent half an hour immersed in the warm water. The research team ensured that the baths were taken at different times throughout the day, and then monitored how well the volunteers slept at night. Baths taken in the morning and afternoon had almost no effect on sleep. However, those taken in the evening, or directly before bedtime, significantly improved the quality of sleep. Scientists aren't exactly sure why a bath at bedtime is so effective, but many believe that it is all about body temperature. Research shows that there is a slight decrease in your body temperature just before you fall asleep. Lying in a warm bath artificially raises your body temperature, but when you climb out of the bath, this temperature abruptly drops and sends a signal to your body that you are ready for sleep. So if you want to get a good night's sleep, take a nice, long bath. And remember that adding bath foam helps, because the bubbles insulate the water and so keep the heat in for longer. Make a list. People often struggle to get to sleep because they're worrying about a problem in their lives or thinking about what they need to do in the morning. Can the humble pencil and paper help solve the problem? Colleen Carney from Duke University Medical Center recruited a group of volunteers with sleep problems and randomly split them into two groups. Before they went to bed, each group was asked to write down a list containing at least three things that they were worried about. The volunteers in one of the groups were also encouraged to note down something they could do to help solve the problem. Everyone was then asked to fold their list in half and put it on their bedside table. Those that had thought about how they might start to solve their problems were more relaxed at bedtime. So if you want to have a good night's sleep, keep a pad by your bedside and before you nod off, make a list of what is on your mind and how you might start to solve these problems. Alternatively, if you tend to stay awake thinking about what you have to do the following day, just use the pad to make a to-do list. The science of snacking. Most people know to avoid large meals and caffeine before going to bed, but aren't aware of which types of food and drink promote sleep. The science is straightforward. First, avoid the lure of the nightcap. Although research shows that even a small amount of alcohol does indeed put you to sleep quicker, it also gives you a more disturbed night, increases the chances of snoring, and disrupts dreaming. Second, you might have heard that a late-night turkey sandwich will help you sleep, because it contains a large amount of a sleep-inducing amino acid called tryptophan. In fact, this is a myth, with the American Chemical Society noting that even the large amount of turkey consumed by Americans at Thanksgiving would be unlikely to cause drowsiness. On the upside, research shows that you can easily increase your chances of getting a good night's sleep by eating a small portion, under 200 calories, of food that is rich in carbohydrates. If you do feel like a late-night snack, go for a small amount of high-carb chow, such as a few biscuits, one slice of toast, a small muffin, a banana, or a small bowl of whole grain cereal. The lavender smell mob. Several studies show that a subtle whiff of lavender helps people nod off. In 2008, psychologist Chris Alford from the University of the West of England in Bristol sprinkled either lavender or odorless almond oil on the bedclothes of female insomniacs, and discovered that the lavender helped improve the quality of their sleep. In similar work, other researchers discovered that lavender-scented bath oils, pillows, and blankets helped improve the sleep of both infants and their mothers. Try a lavender diffuser or oil to ensure that your room smells of sleep. 4. How to fall asleep. Many people lie in bed struggling to fall asleep. Both super sleepers and sleep scientists have developed lots of techniques to help people nod off the moment they hit the hay. Strange as it may sound, it's all about having happy thoughts, faking a yawn, and trying your very best to stay awake. Counting sheep. According to the old adage, if you want to get to sleep, imagine an endless series of sheep leaping over a fence and keep a running count of the total number of animals involved. Unfortunately, this particular technique has never been subjected to scientific scrutiny. However, work by Stephen Haynes from the Southern Illinois University suggests that it may indeed help people nod off. Haynes asked both insomniacs and good sleepers to carry out moderately difficult mental arithmetic problems, such as counting backwards from 100 in threes, as they tried to fall asleep. Those without any sleep-related problems took longer than usual to nod off, while the insomniacs did indeed get to sleep quicker. If you're not good with numbers, try thinking of a category such as countries or fruit and vegetables, and then coming up with an example of that category for each letter of the alphabet. For example, A is for Albania, B is for Bulgaria, or A is for apple, B is for banana. Think happy thoughts. Other work in the same vein suggests that there may be far more pleasant and non-sheep-related ways of getting to sleep. In one experiment, Alison Harvey, now at the University of California, randomly allocated insomniacs to one of three groups and gave each group different bedtime instructions. One group was asked to imagine a situation that they found pleasant and relaxing. Another group was told to try to forget about their worries and concerns, and the final group received no guidance at all. The results were remarkable. The insomniacs, who hadn't been given any special instructions, took over an hour to get to sleep, while those trying to forget about their concerns took just over 40 minutes. However, the volunteers who'd been asked to think pleasant thoughts nodded off in just over 20 minutes. To follow this technique, try creating a wonderful fantasy world in your head. Avoid any imagery that is too exciting or sexually arousing. Instead, perhaps plan your perfect vacation. Imagine how you would spend a lottery win. Think about a great evening out. Or set off on an amazing adventure in a fantasy spaceship. The Magic Yawn. One of my previous books, Rip It Up, describes how the way in which you physically behave influences how you feel. For instance, smiling makes you feel happy, and forcing your face into a frown makes you feel sad. This is also true of sleep. When you behave as if you are sleepy, you become tired. To take advantage of this strange effect, let your eyes droop, your mouth hang open, and your arms and legs feel heavy. Sink into your bed, as if you've had a long and tiring day in the office. Even fake a yawn or two. In short, fool your body into thinking that it is time for bed. The paradox. Medical researcher Niall Broomfield from the University of Glasgow wondered whether some reverse psychology could be used to help people sleep. Broomfield assembled two groups of volunteers and monitored their sleep for 2 weeks. One group was asked to spend each night trying to stay awake for as long as possible, while the other group didn't receive any special instructions. Those trying to stay awake felt less anxious at bedtime and reported falling asleep quicker. So if you want to fall asleep, try to stay awake. However, remember that you have to rely on the power of your mind. You are allowed to keep your eyes open, but no reading, watching television, or moving about allowed. The power of association. The famous Russian psychologist Ivan Pavlov spent much of his life exploring the concept of association. In his most famous experiment, Pavlov rang a bell each time he presented a dog with food, and eventually found that the sound of the bell alone was enough to make the dog salivate. The same idea can be used to help you fall asleep. Choose a soporific piece of music that you like, and ensure that it's quietly playing as you fall asleep. Over time, your brain will come to associate the piece of music with sleep. So simply listening to the music will help you to nod off. 5. What to do if you wake up during the night. Some people suffer from sleep maintenance insomnia, waking up during the night and then struggling to get back to sleep. If this happens to you, use the following techniques to get back to sleep quickly. Get up. If you have suddenly woken up because you've remembered something that you need to do the next day, simply make a note of your thought and try to get back to sleep. However, if you do wake for more than about 20 minutes during the night, most sleep scientists recommend getting out of bed and doing some form of non-stimulating activity. Although many people read a book or magazine, Professor Jim Horn recommends an activity that you find pleasant, relaxing, and uses your hands as well as your head. In his book Sleep Faring, Horn advises people to work on a jigsaw or art project. Whatever it is that you decide to do, avoid bright lights and computer screens. and if the problem reoccurs later in the night, climb back out of bed and distract yourself again. Don't worry. Be happy. Perhaps not surprisingly, spending the night feeling as if you are unable to sleep makes many people feel anxious. Over the course of a night, this anxiety disrupts their sleep even more, creating a vicious downward cycle. If you do find yourself lying in bed becoming anxious because you think you aren't getting enough sleep, here are some tips. Remember that you're probably getting more sleep than you think. Research shows that we all tend to underestimate how much of the night we spend sleeping. In one study, for instance, Alison Harvey measured how much time insomniacs spent sleeping during the night, and then compared it to how much they thought they had slept. The insomniacs were convinced that they had only slept for an average of about 3 hours per night, whereas in reality they'd been asleep for an average of nearer 7 hours. Psychologist Jeremy Mercer from Flinders University in South Australia has attempted to discover the cause of this strange phenomenon. In one study, Mercer invited insomniacs to his sleep laboratory, woke them from REM, and asked them whether they had just been sleeping. Remarkably, many of the volunteers believed they'd been wide awake, despite having been sound asleep, thus raising the intriguing possibility that they were essentially dreaming about being awake. Whatever the explanation, other research suggests that simply showing insomniacs data proving that they had indeed had a good night's rest causes them to feel less anxious about getting to sleep. Just relaxing in bed is good for you, even if you're not asleep. Rather than focusing on nodding off, try a simple relaxation exercise to make the most of the downtime. One of the most effective involves starting off by tensing your toes for about 10 seconds, and then letting them relax. Use the same procedure as you work your way up the body, tensing and relaxing your legs, arms, hands, chest, shoulders, and head. Finally, know that your nighttime awakening may have its roots in our pre-industrial sleep patterns. And so, be perfectly normal. When waking up in the middle of the night is good for you. During the late 1990s, Virginia Tech historian Roger Ekirch examined how people's nocturnal behavior had changed over time. While looking through historical diaries, prayer manuals, and medical books, Ekirch uncovered a stream of strange references to the notion of first and second sleep. Digging deeper, Ekirch discovered that many people didn't take their sleep in one solid block at night, but instead slept for about 4 hours, first sleep, woke up for roughly an hour, and then went back for another 4 hours, second sleep. The work also revealed that the time between the two periods was used for various activities, including quietly thinking, reading, smoking, praying, chatting, having sex, and sometimes even visiting neighbors. Several scientists suggested that this seemingly strange sleep schedule, now known as segmented sleeping, was a natural response to the long periods of darkness associated with pre-industrial winters in the Northern Hemisphere. To find out if this was the case, Thomas Vair from the National Institute of Mental Health turned back the hands of time and had volunteers experience artificially constructed days that contained just 10 hours of light and 14 hours of darkness. After a short time, the volunteers naturally drifted into a segmented sleep schedule. Other researchers have argued segmented sleep may be good for the mind. The period between people's first and second sleep tends to coincide with when the brain produces large amounts of a hormone known as prolactin. This chemical has various effects, but can help generate a positive mood, and so help to lessen the stresses and strains of everyday life. So don't worry if you do wake up in the middle of the night. It may actually be good for you. the young ones. Of course, there are two groups of people that will struggle to apply the rules of super sleep. Babies and young children. But worry not, help is at hand. Scientists have developed a series of techniques specifically aimed to helping these two tricky groups to enjoy the night. Here are seven of the best evidence-based tips to help you get through the night. Routine. For years, many parenting experts have suggested that one of the simplest and most effective ways of improving children's sleep involves creating a bedtime routine. Research by Jody Mindell from the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia shows that they are correct. In Mindell's study, a group of parents were asked to carry out the same 30-minute bedtime plan, which involved giving the child a bath, lightly massaging them, giving them a little cuddle, placing the child in their bed, and then turning out the lights. Within 2 weeks, the children fell asleep faster, woke up less during the night, and were in a better mood in the morning. Other work suggests that the routine should avoid anything too stimulating. No television, video games, high-energy hide-and-seek, or caffeinated drinks. Some caregivers also find it especially helpful to create a bedtime chart that shows each of the steps, setting a timer for 25 minutes, and then rewarding the child if they finish before the timer goes off. Crying it out. This option involves caregivers establishing a bedtime routine, putting the baby or child to bed, and then ignoring them no matter how much they scream and shout. Or, as proponents of the technique refer to it, self-soothe. Although seemingly tough, research shows that this approach often produces fast results and reduces severe crying within just a few nights. However, some practitioners and parents have raised an eyebrow at the technique, suggesting that it is overly harsh, and that continued crying may cause psychological or physical harm to the child. Graduated extinction. This technique is often seen as the acceptable face of crying it out. The caretaker starts off by staying with the child until they start to fall asleep, and then returns to their own bed or living room. If the child wakes up and starts crying, the caregiver waits a specified period of time before going to see the child, and even then only offers minimal attention. Excessive talking to or touching the child are frowned upon. After a few weeks, the interval between the infant crying and the caregiver arriving is increased, typically starting at 5 minutes and increasing in 5-minute blocks. Once again, research shows that this technique is effective. Retreat. Does your child struggle to sleep unless you are next to them? Then it is time to retreat. In this gentle technique, you start off by being next to the child and waiting until they're asleep. Then, a few days later, you move to the edge of the bed and again wait for them to nod off. Then, over time, you move further away from the bed, perhaps sitting in a nearby chair or sitting on the other side of the room. You have to resist any protests by the child and, over time, aim to have your child falling asleep without your having to be in the same room. Fading. This two-part technique is designed for toddlers who are struggling to fall asleep until late in the evening, and so waking up late in the morning. First, the caregiver makes going to bed pleasurable, so that the child associates bedtime with fun time. This might involve playing a quiet game or two, reading a bedtime story, or creating a drawing. This routine is then instigated when the child feels sleepy, no matter how late this is in the evening. The caregiver then wakes up the child at the normal time in the morning, rather than waiting for them to wake up at their preferred time, and then moves the bedtime slightly earlier each night, until the child is going to bed at a reasonable time. Shut that door. Does your child keep wandering out of their room at night? If so, they need to learn how to fall asleep. This can involve giving them some kind of object to hug, such as a teddy bear or blanket, or getting them to make up a fun story in their heads. However, in the meantime, stop the wandering by immediately returning the child to their bedroom and shutting their door for 1 minute. If the child wanders again, increase the amount of time that the door is shut by a minute, up to a maximum of 5 minutes. After that, padlock their room. Just kidding. Lark Rise. Is your child getting out of bed too early? Try installing a nightlight with a timer and tell them that they can only get out of bed when the light comes on. For centuries, people have struggled to sleep. It doesn't have to be like this. 60 years of research has resulted in a series of techniques that can boost both the quantity and quality of sleep in adults, babies, and children. All you need to do is learn the secrets of the super sleepers and then enjoy the best night's rest you have ever had. Should you sleep in the same bed as a baby? Many caregivers are tempted to sleep in the same bed as their babies to make it easier to soothe the infant and breastfeed them. But is this a good idea? Sudden infant death syndrome, SIDS, occurs when infants below the age of 1 inexplicably die. Although the occurrence of SIDS in the US has dropped over 50% since parents have been advised to put sleeping infants on their backs, it is still the third leading cause of all infant deaths in America. After analyzing records from more than 1,000 SIDS deaths, Robert Carpenter from the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine and his colleagues concluded that bed sharing should be avoided. Carpenter's findings showed that sleeping with an infant that was less than 3 months old resulted in a fivefold increase in the risk of SIDS, even among parents who did not use alcohol, drugs, or smoke cigarettes. It seems that it's all too easy for sleep-deprived caregivers to inadvertently place a hand or arm over an infant's face or roll on top of them. Health professionals have urged caregivers to avoid sleeping in the same bed as a child who is less than 6 months old. If caregivers do want to be close to a child throughout the night, it is suggested that they place the child in a crib or cot close to their own beds. Assignment: The Mouth and Nose Test. Please take a few moments to carry out this simple 3-part test and make a note of your results. 1. First, please close your mouth. Now shut your left nostril by gently pressing on the side of it. Keeping your mouth closed, take a deep breath through your right nostril. Now repeat the test, but this time close your mouth and right nostril, and then take a deep breath through your left nostril. Finally, keep your mouth closed and take a deep breath through both nostrils. Did you feel like your nostrils were congested and therefore breathing was difficult during any of these exercises? Yes or no? 2. Please open your mouth and try to make a snoring sound. Now close your mouth and try to make the same sound. Are you able to make the same snoring sound with your mouth closed? Yes or no? 3. If you can make a snoring sound with your mouth closed, stick your tongue slightly out of your mouth and gently grip it with your teeth, ensuring that your lips are sealed around the sides of your tongue. Now try to make the snoring noise again. Is the sound of your snoring reduced? Yes or no? Many thanks. We will come back to your results in the next lesson. Lesson 4. On Sleepwalking and Night Terrors. Where we go for a stroll with some sleepwalkers, find out if you can commit a murder in your sleep, and discover the deadly downside of snoring. Most nights, the vast majority of people move through the various stages of sleep in a systematic and orderly fashion. However, once in a blue moon, some individuals don't follow this well-trodden path, and instead travel off-road to a weird and mysterious place. A place where the normal rules don't apply. They may encounter their inner demons and they could even face death. In this lesson, we're going to journey deep into the dark side of sleep and find out what really does go bump in the night. During our time together, you will discover just how wonderfully weird your brain can be. Find out what happens when your unconscious mind suddenly hijacks your body and learns something that might save your life. We begin with a spot of naked gardening. A great perturbation in nature. In March 2005, Rebecca Armstrong was woken up by a strange noise emanating from her garden. Noticing that her husband was no longer in bed, Rebecca decided to go downstairs and find out what was going on. She wandered outside and discovered that her husband was standing in the middle of their garden, completely naked. Even more surprisingly, Ian was busily cutting the grass with the couple's electric lawnmower, and had clearly been working away for quite some time, because he had almost finished mowing the entire lawn. Perhaps most remarkable of all, he was sound asleep. Ian had gone walkies in his sleep several times before, but this was the first time that he had undertaken a spot of nocturnal, naked gardening. Reluctant to disturb her semi-conscious husband, Rebecca unplugged the mower and went back to bed. A short while later, Ian sleepwalked his way back to the bedroom and lay down next to his wife. When Rebecca woke Ian up and explained what had happened, he initially refused to believe her, and only changed his mind when he saw that the soles of his feet were caked in soil, and that the lawn was newly mowed. Ian Armstrong is far from the only nocturnal wanderer to take a walk on the wild side. In June 2005, police and firefighters were called to a building site in southwest London because a passerby had spotted a young girl lying on the arm of a 130-foot crane. A firefighter carefully climbed up the crane, only to discover a 15-year-old girl fast asleep on the top of a large concrete counterweight. The eagle-eyed firefighter noticed that the girl had a mobile phone in her pocket, and so decided to quietly crawl up to the girl, gently remove the telephone, and call the girl's parents. The girl was eventually woken up with the help of her mother and brought back down to earth via a hydraulic lift. Subsequent inquiries revealed that the girl lived near the building site and had managed to climb up the crane and walk along its narrow arm while sound asleep. Other sleepwalkers have displayed a similarly high level of disregard for their own safety. In August 2004, Basingstoke police found an abandoned and mangled car next to a busy road. The car appeared to have careered out of control, hit a lamppost, and ended up being embedded in the undergrowth. The driver was missing, but the police were able to trace the vehicle to a nearby pub. When officers arrived at the pub, they found the car's owner wearing a blood-stained T-shirt and suffering from several facial cuts. The man was arrested, and a breathalyzer test revealed that he was 3 times above the legal limit. When the police interviewed the driver, he denied having any memory of the incident, and insisted that the crash had happened while he was sleepwalking. The results of several medical tests, combined with a family history of sleepwalking, convinced the court that the man was telling the truth, and he was found not guilty. Some sleepwalkers prefer to spend the night eating rather than drinking. For example, 55-year-old former chef Robert Wood from Fife. Wood regularly sleepwalks into his kitchen and rustles up omelets, stir-fries, and even the odd spaghetti bolognese while completely unconscious. Such sleep eating is surprisingly common among sleepwalkers, and frequently results in them struggling to understand why they are mysteriously gaining weight. Then there are the strange instances of sexsomnia, in which sleepwalkers masturbate, grope others, and even engage in full-blown sexual intercourse. In one recently reported case, a middle-aged Australian woman regularly left her house and had sex with strangers. Like many sleepwalkers, the woman claimed to have no memory of these encounters, and the problem only came to light when she discovered condoms scattered around her house. The woman's name was not released to the media, presumably to both ensure her privacy and prevent a dramatic rise in local house prices. Equally curious is sleep drawing, in which a person displays only a modest amount of artistic ability when they're wide awake, but creates amazing images while sound asleep. Last year, 37-year-old Londoner Lee Hadwin hit the headlines when he claimed to suffer from this rare condition. Creatively nicknamed Vincent van Sloth and Kipasso by the media, Lee's nocturnal artwork includes detailed portraits of Marilyn Monroe and a series of circle-inspired abstract pieces. According to one newspaper report, some of Hadwin's pieces have been bought by celebrities for six-figure sums. Sleepwalking has also kept pace with technology. In 2009, for instance, the academic journal Sleep Medicine reported the first occasion of sleep email, described as ZZZ mailing, wherein a 44-year-old Spanish woman climbed out of bed, walked to the next room, turned on the computer, logged into her email account, and invited a friend round for dinner. "Come tomorrow and sort this hellhole out. Dinner and drinks, 4 p.m. Bring wine and caviar only." The woman was only aware of the message when her friend replied the following day. Such extreme examples of sleepwalking are relatively rare. However, surveys show that a surprisingly large percentage of the population routinely carry out simple actions when they're asleep, including sitting up in bed, starting to get dressed, or wandering around the bedroom. Indeed, one recent poll revealed that almost 4% of American adults, more than 8 million people, have experienced at least one episode of sleepwalking in the past year. These episodes usually take place a few hours after people have gone to bed, and the problem is especially prevalent among the young, with 15% of children experiencing some form of nocturnal wandering. While some people spend night after night walking the walk, others are equally busy talking the talk. All talk, no action. Sleep scientist Arthur Arkin from City University of New York dedicated his life to listening to people as they slept, and his 640-page tome, Sleep Talking, Psychology and Psychophysiology, is widely seen as the definitive guide to nighttime utterances. For years, Arkin carefully monitored sleep talkers in his laboratory, and his observations shattered various widely held myths. Many people think that sleep talking only involves the occasional mumble or slurred word, but Arkin discovered that many sleep talkers merrily chattered away for several minutes at a time. Indeed, in the 1960s, American songwriter and prolific sleep talker, Dion McGregor, decided to record his extensive nighttime comments and then use them as the basis for an album. McGregor teamed up with Decca Records, and together they created and released The Dream World of Dion McGregor, He Talks in His Sleep. On this surreal album, McGregor unconsciously mumbles his way through several deeply strange monologues, including those describing a starch-based diet, a tiny city populated by midget chickens and miniature tombstones, and an odd dinner party in which all of the chocolate eclairs have been laced with poison. Perhaps not surprisingly, the album was a financial disaster and has never been reissued. On the upside, McGregor's ramblings have attracted a small but loyal following over the years, and his record is now a highly sought-after collector's item. There is also the thorny issue of whether sleep talking presents a reliable guide to people's innermost thoughts and feelings. You may have heard it said that dreamers never lie, but do sleep talkers openly mention secrets that they would never reveal when they're awake? It's tricky to know for sure. Over the years, there have been many anecdotal reports of sleep talkers letting the cat out of the bag, including instances of them confessing to serious crimes and describing illicit sexual affairs. However, after monitoring hundreds of sleep talkers over several years, Arkin only came across two relatively trivial instances in which someone apparently let something slip. In one, a young male sleep talker muttered, "Am I queer or something?" and then, when asked about the comment the following day, chuckled in apparent shame. In the second instance, a sleep-talking man mentioned the initials CPW. At the time, Arkin innocently thought they stood for Central Park West. However, when Arkin mentioned the incident to the man the next morning, the man's face turned red, as he explained that the initials referred to the cosmic pussy whip, used by an overly dominant wife of a close friend. Finally, Arkin's work also revealed that it's possible to hold a conversation with someone who is sound asleep. After years of trial and error, Arkin discovered that the best way forward involves waiting until your friend or partner nods off and produces some sort of initial mumble. This mumble is your cue to leap into action and ask a couple of straightforward questions that require a simple yes or no answer, such as, "Is your name Eric? And were you born in London?" Once you've managed to elicit a few responses, you can then move on to questions that are more interesting and require a longer reply, including, for example, those timeless classics, "Have you ever found a goat overly attractive?" and "What is your PIN?" After chatting with lots of unconscious volunteers, Arkin concluded that they tend to be an evasive and cagey bunch, with one dramatically ending a conversation by declaring, "I'm asleep." In both sleepwalking and sleep-talking, people's unconscious mind seems to take control of their bodies. Most of the time, the results are fairly harmless and are, at worst, the cause of much merriment in the morning. However, once in a while, a far more sinister type of nocturnal phenomenon can rear its ugly head. Like sleepwalking and sleep-talking, those experiencing this phenomenon have no idea what they're doing. But this time, their actions can have the most horrific and tragic consequences. Fright Night. At 10 p.m. on the 15th of July 2008, retired couple Brian and Christine Thomas drove their camper van into the Welsh seaside village of Aberporth. The couple found a space in a car park at the edge of the village, turned out the lights, and climbed into bed. Just as they were drifting off to sleep, however, Brian and Christine were disturbed by a group of teenagers wheel-spinning their cars. Annoyed by the noise, Brian got up, drove the camper van to another nearby car park, and again tried to settle down for the night. Just after midnight, Brian thought he heard one of the teenagers breaking into the camper van. Brian lashed out, and in the ensuing struggle believed that he strangled the intruder to death. It was then that Brian woke, to discover that he had just experienced a terrifying episode in which his sleeping mind had become convinced that he was in danger. There was no teenage intruder. Instead, Brian had killed his wife. Brian was examined by several sleep experts in the 10 months prior to the trial. Leading that work was the man who had originally piqued my interest in the science of sleep, Dr. Chris Idzikovsky. Chris and his team visited Brian in jail, monitored him for several nights, and produced a report that would be used to help determine Brian's guilt or innocence. What Chris discovered during his prison examinations was that Brian had regularly experienced similar type of nighttime disturbances prior to his holiday. Indeed, these experiences had so disturbed his sleep that the couple often slept in separate rooms at home. Chris's technician, Stevie Williams, wired up Brian to an EEG system and spent the night sitting outside his cell, monitoring the data. A camera placed next to Brian's bed allowed Chris to see what was happening on the other side of the locked door. Midway through the night, Chris saw Brian suddenly sit up and look around. A glance at the EEG data instantly revealed that Brian was still sound asleep. After other similar episodes, Chris concluded that Brian had probably been suffering from these sleep disturbances for years without receiving any formal treatment. This evidence, combined with a plethora of positive character statements, led to Brian being the first person in Britain to be found not guilty of murder on the grounds of a sleep disorder. Brian's unconscious but deadly behavior may well have been the result of him experiencing a deeply strange phenomenon known as night terror. Almost everyone has had a scary dream or a nightmare. However, night terrors are very different phenomena, and experienced by only around 6% of children and 2% of adults. In a typical episode, people become convinced that there is some kind of serious threat around them, and respond accordingly. The exact nature of the imagined threat varies from person to person, but often takes the form of huge spiders, an unwelcome intruder, a pack of evil dogs, or an all-powerful supernatural entity. Even though the person is still asleep, they may suddenly sit up in bed with their eyes wide open, scream and lash out. Thankfully, only a vanishingly small number of night terrors result in a lost life. Sleep terrors tend to take place during the first few hours of the night, with each episode lasting a few minutes, and usually ending with the person simply going straight back to sleep. During these scary episodes, people's heart rate often accelerates to more than 160 beats per minute, making it one of the most stressful events that the body can experience. As I mentioned in the introduction, I went through a period of having night terrors on a regular basis and can confirm that they are no fun. Sleepwalking, sleep talking, and night terrors are all examples of a more general disorder known as parasomnia, Latin for beyond sleep. Researchers have long attempted to get to grips with this strange phenomenon, and their work has proved invaluable to the millions of people whose bodies come alive when they are sound asleep. Probing parasomnia. In 1815, John William Polidori produced one of the first theses on sleepwalking while studying for a medical degree at Edinburgh University. In his essay, catchily entitled Dissertatio Medica Inauguralis, Quaedam de Morbo, Onero Dinia Dicto, Complectens. Note, inaugural medical dissertation concerning a disease called sleepwalking. The 19-year-old Polidori argued that sleepwalking was a hypnotic state that was best cured with beatings, cold baths, and electricity. Although the essay failed to make an impact on medical minds, Polidori's work played a key role in shaping modern-day literature. Acting as the personal physician to the poet Lord Byron, Polidori was part of a select group of writers who were challenged by Byron to each produce a ghost story. Drawing on his fascination with the night and sleepwalking, Polidori produced one of the first English-language vampire stories, The Vampire. This groundbreaking work quickly caught the public's attention and has resulted in Polidori being seen as the creator of the vampire genre of fantasy fiction. During the late 1830s, the chemist and creator of paraffin, Carl Ludwig von Reichenbach, also became fascinated with sleepwalking. After interviewing several sleepwalkers at length, von Reichenbach concluded that the strange phenomenon was brought about by the position of the moon and reflected the existence of an all-powerful energy called the odic force. Ironically for the creator of paraffin, von Reichenbach's theory failed to set the scientific world on fire, and his beloved odic force has now been relegated to the file drawer labeled Nah. Next in line to try to unravel the mystery of parasomnia was the world-famous psychiatrist Sigmund Freud. In 1907, Freud addressed the Vienna Psychoanalytic Society and unveiled his new theory of sleepwalking. According to the father of psychoanalysis, sleepwalkers had a deep-seated sense of anxiety and were trying to make their way back to a place that had made them feel secure as a child. Over the years, Freudians have failed to produce any convincing evidence to support his somewhat strange theory, resulting in sleep experts around the world rejecting the idea on the grounds of wild speculation. Fortunately, modern-day researchers have worked hard to slowly piece together a more scientific understanding of sleepwalking. Some of this work has revealed that sleepwalking has a strong genetic component, with around 30% of sleepwalkers having a relative who walks in their sleep, compared to just 17% of non-sleepwalkers. This genetic linkage sometimes results in several sleepwalkers wandering around the same household at night, including one case in which an entire French family of sleepwalkers woke up to discover that they were all sitting around their dining table. Other work has explored what is going on in people's brains when they sleepwalk or experience a night terror. After monitoring people's brain activity throughout the night, researchers discovered that sleepwalkers are not acting out their dreams, and sleep terrors are not nightmares. As we discovered in Lesson 1, dreams and nightmares tend to take place during REM. In contrast, sleepwalking, night terrors, and sleep talking originate during deep sleep, associated with stage 3 and stage 4 of the sleep cycle. Although the process is still not fully understood, many of these sleep scientists believe that sleepwalking and night terrors are the result of the brain struggling to move from deep sleep to wakefulness. During a normal sleep cycle, we've learned you move from stages 1 and 2, light sleep, through stages 3 and 4, deep sleep, back to stage 2, and then experience REM. This cycle takes about 90 minutes to complete, and is repeated several times throughout the night. And as you move between the lighter stages of sleep and REM, you often experience micro-awakenings. These episodes of wakefulness only last about 10 seconds or so, and you immediately go back to sleep afterwards. Because micro-awakenings are so brief, you are usually not aware of them. Many sleep scientists believe that sleepwalking, night terrors, and sleep talking are the result of your brain rapidly moving from deep sleep into a type of state normally associated with a micro-awakening. As a result, you end up in a strange, zombie-like state in which you are not fully awake or completely asleep. Although one part of your brain is trapped in deep sleep, and so almost completely unconscious, another part is functioning well enough for you to carry out relatively simple forms of behavior on autopilot. As one sleep expert noted, sleepwalkers appear to be experiencing a third form of consciousness that is most similar to instances in which you may have driven a familiar route home from work, but then realized that you have absolutely no memory of the journey. These important discoveries explain why sleepwalking and night terrors are so different to dreaming and nightmares. For instance, let's examine the issue of movement. When you dream, almost all of your body is paralyzed in order that you do not act out your dreams and hurt yourself. However, during sleepwalking and night terrors, you're able to wander around and thrash out. Also, when researchers woke up dreamers and sleepwalkers and asked them to describe what was going through their heads, two very different types of reports emerged. Not surprisingly, those that had been in REM tended to describe a complex and colorful dream. In contrast, the reports from the sleepwalkers were far more like the basic and fragmented thoughts that occur outside of REM, and often just involved a very simple scenario, such as, must take my dog out, or my house is on fire. Also, sleepwalking and night terrors usually take place within a few hours of a person going to bed, because the initial part of the night is dominated by deep sleep. In contrast, most dreaming happens in the early morning, because the latter part of sleep contains much more REM. Finally, children are more likely than adults to experience sleepwalking and night terrors, because they spend more time in deep sleep during the night. Dream disorders. Not all parasomnia happens outside of REM. In fact, there are two disorders that can emerge when you dream. First, some people experience an unpleasant phenomenon known as sleep paralysis. This strange experience is associated with a highly regimented set of sensations that include waking up and feeling a crushing weight on your chest, sensing an evil presence, and seeing strange figures in the darkness. These strange sensations are often attributed to the presence of demons, ghosts, or aliens. In fact, it's science at work. When you dream, your mind produces lots of strange images, and your brainstem blocks almost all bodily movement. However, once in a while you wake up from a dream in a somewhat confused state, with your brain becoming conscious but still experiencing the paralysis and weird imagery associated with dreaming. This terrifying combination causes you to feel as if you're being pinned to your bed, and perhaps seeing some type of scary supernatural entity. Struggling to make sense of what is going on, you convince yourself that you are being pinned down by an all-powerful evil entity. However, this phenomenon can be overcome with the help of another simple technique. If you do happen to experience sleep paralysis, try to wiggle a finger or toe, or blink. Even the smallest of movements will help your brain lift the paralysis and bring you back to reality. The second form of REM-based parasomnia is known as REM sleep behavior disorder, and is in many ways the exact opposite of sleep paralysis. Rather than being paralyzed when you're conscious, people move around when they're having a dream. During these episodes, people essentially act out their dreams, often kicking, screaming, punching, and even jumping out of bed. The condition affects about 1 in 200 people, with the vast majority of sufferers being men over the age of 50. There is no relationship between the aggression displayed during the episodes and waking behavior, with many people who are friendly during the day becoming aggressive when they experience the disorder. The problem is treatable with various drugs, and those suffering from the condition are often advised to remove potentially dangerous objects from the bedroom and place their mattresses on the floor. The disorder appears to be due to a malfunction in the part of the brainstem that controls movement, and around a third of elderly people with the disorder develop Parkinson's disease within 3 years. Other brain-based work has examined what causes normally non-violent people to sometimes thrash out during episodes of parasomnia. In the year 2000, neurologist Claudio Bassetti from the University Hospital in Switzerland set out to scan a sleepwalker's brain when they went for a nocturnal stroll. Bassetti invited a 16-year-old boy with a history of sleepwalking into his laboratory and monitored his brain activity throughout the night. The boy tended to sleepwalk several times each week, and so the researchers thought they had a good chance of catching an episode. They were right. On the second night, the boy stood up with his eyes open, moved around, and uttered a few unintelligible words. The data revealed that the front parts of the boy's brain were inactive throughout the episode. This section of the brain plays a vital role in exercising self-control, and so explains why those experiencing parasomnia may become uncharacteristically aggressive and violent. Much of the research into night terrors and sleepwalking can help those suffering from those unwanted nocturnal intrusions. Researchers have examined many of the factors that promote sleepwalking and night terrors, including fatigue, heat, and stress. One study, for instance, conducted by Mathieu Pilon at the University of Montreal, looked at the effects of sleep deprivation and disturbed sleep. Pilon arranged for people that had a history of sleepwalking to spend the night at his laboratory. The researchers ensured that the volunteers had either slept normally the night before or had been kept awake for the previous 25 hours. Pilon and his team then waited until the volunteers went into deep sleep and attempted to disturb them by sounding a buzzer. 30% of the well-rested sleepwalkers and an amazing 100% of the sleep-deprived sleepwalkers started to head off into the night. The study showed that the incidence of sleepwalking and night terrors are increased by sleep deprivation and nighttime disturbances, and emphasized the importance of sufferers